What's up, everybody? This is Tuck Smith, and you're listening to Tom and Zeus on the Shout It Out Loud cast.
That's right. We're back with another episode of Dorm Damage, the show where anything and everything is on the table and the table gets smashed. It's episode 56, and we have a very exciting and special guest, somebody that Zeus and I are very fond of and excited to present to you guys. Zeus, who joins us this week?
We have the great Jacob Givens. Man, this is like a personal privilege for me and you to get this guy on our show. You guys have no idea what fanboys we are of his videos and stuff.
Yeah. If you guys aren't familiar with him, then you're not on TikTok and you're not on Instagram and you're not on social media and you're probably not a fan of 90s alternative and grunge like we are. However, we discovered him a while back. We've been a fan of him ever since. And we said, well, you know what the hell? Let's reach out to him, see if we can get him on and talk about the stuff that Zeus and I love, which is grunge 90s alternative. And he was so gracious to come on, and we just had an absolute blast.
Here he is, Jacob Givens.
All right, this week we have a special guest. We're so excited to have a kindred spirit when it comes to 90s alternative and grunge. He's got a podcast, Waterproof Records, but you guys know him from TikTok and YouTube and his hilarious, awesome videos. We're thrilled to welcome Jacob Givens to the show tonight. What's up, Jacob?
What's up, dudes? It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me on the show. Great to meet you guys.
Awesome. Awesome.
So this is all organic. We didn't really get the intro. So he was just asking us, wait a minute, you guys know each other? I'll paint the picture for you.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So we meet in college. Yeah. 91, we go into college. Yep. Okay. Hair metal's still there.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just on another pod just now, and I just switched to come on this.
Where
I
You've was been pod hopping. You're
pod hopping all day.
Every day.
Where I was bragging, because there's a lot of Skid Row shit in the news right now.
Right.
When I first build up my stereo system in college. Well, here's my CD. There's my receiver. There's my fucking speakers up bigger than me.
Yes.
Piling up, I blasted Monkey Business by Skid Row.
Great song.
Thinking I was the coolest kid in the fucking dorm room. And I'm thinking everyone's like, whatever this shit is. But I played that. Tom and I meet, you know, we're all buddies, kind of hang around the corner. But we had this kindred spirit because we're both fans of Kiss. So that is like, you know, the Kiss Army. Oh, my God. You're the one at this school that I'll know and be buddies with.
That's amazing.
But during this time, hair metal, we still like those stuff. Tom ventured into hip-hop. I ventured into country 90s. But all of a sudden, and we were talking about this earlier, right? It's like the golden age of music. All these bands started fucking popping up. Who was it that we were just talking about this? Like, it was like the 70s, where all these fucking new artists.
We had Keith Roth from SiriusXM. Yes. We talked to him last night.
Oh, and nice.
We were talking about, all of a sudden, it's Nevermind by Nirvana. It's Pearl Jam 10. It's Soundgarden. It's Alice in Chains. It's Temple of the Dog. It's Stone Temple Pilots. You can't keep up with the incredible,
legendary album. So we have that love that came into it. So we find that we started this podcast. Kiss has got its unique stuff. And the fans and listeners, the Kiss and stuff, they're not big into when we get into the 90s grunge and other stuff, because they have this hatred. You guys took away our bands.
Yeah.
You guys. And especially Nirvana. If I bring Nirvana, which was my band, they fucking hate them. So when we found you, we're like, we have to get him on. We need to get that grunge release, that alt 90s shit. Somebody that gets it. And how did we find you? We found you because explain the first video that me and him were like, dude, and we texted each other. We're like, have you seen this fucking
thing? I gotta know.
This is how we discovered you. I don't know how long ago it was. I'm a huge Rage Against the Machine fan.
Hell yeah.
It was your video that you made of freedom.
Yes. Yes.
And I sent it to Zeus. I showed it to my son. I said, I go, when you look at it, it goes, I'm angry, but I'm learning. the funniest fucking. And then at the end, when Zach starts screaming freedom, and you're all like, oh,
just falling down to the ground. Yeah.
And you're just like going nuts.
Yes.
I thought it was the fucking greatest thing I've ever seen. I'm like, holy shit, this fucking guy gets it.
Yeah.
And he's talking about music that we love that we don't get to share that much on our show.
Oh my God.
Fucking loved it. And then you start going down your rabbit hole and start seeing these other videos. And then you start doing like, was it Them Bones with a, and then
getting scared, fucking Jenga.
Fucking, I don't know where you came up with this. The sense of humor and the love of this music, but it fucking fit in these short, precise videos. And so everybody out there that's listening and you want to get into Jacob's podcast and stuff, find his videos, follow him on YouTube, Twitter, and
all I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok, all those places. But you guys, that's so awesome. I love that it was that one, but it doesn't surprise me because that's really the one that it made its way to Tom Morello. And and he fucking tweeted it out. he wrote louder for the people in the back, and he tweeted it.
Yeah,
and it wasn't even my account. It was this other really nice guy named Paul Bay, and he sent it out, and Tom picked it up, retweets it, and then the next day I'm in Spin magazine. There's an article, and it says this guy perfectly describes what it's like to listen to 90s music.
Yes.
Yeah,
article. And I'm like, holy shit. And my mom's visiting me out of town. And I'm telling her, I'm like, Mom, I'm in Spin magazine. She goes, is that good? And I was like, it's like such a huge moment for me because, you know, we grew up reading that magazine and here I was.
Yeah.
And because Tom saw it. So that was really the one that caught people by surprise. And they're like, he fucking gets it. He knows what rage did to us back then because it was this really surprising thing. But I do want to say I was also into hair metal, glam metal. I was also into that. I'm just a few years behind you guys. So I was listening to Skid Row and, you know, was listening to Motley Crue and I loved all that shit. And then I can see why when you brought up the whole thing about Nirvana, because it was like, flip of the switch.
Yep.
Everything changed overnight. And I think that people who weren't there think that we're exaggerating or it's hyperbole. And it's like, no, you understand. It was like one day MTV played this, and then the next day they played this.
I literally took my CDs and fucking like, oh, I'm not having this in my room. Ain't no chick ain't coming in there. See, totally. Poison. Ew.
Right.
All of it gone. And then me and him are going to Harvard Square. Now we're buying these things called CD singles. Yeah. Oh, yeah? This one has Aneurysm on the back. What'd you get? Something called Yellow Ledbetter? Like, where'd you find that?
Yeah,
oh, right. We're getting this. And, like, I ended up, I have, like, all the original CD singles, Nirvana stuff, all the stuff we got from Tom would get Pearl Jam. He'd go out. And then all of a sudden now, what was the other one? Jar of Flies comes out. Single soundtrack comes out.
Yeah.
And then you had the five, we did an episode on this, the five CD changer in college.
Totally.
What was in it? So we were like, okay, well, 10 goes in, never mind, single soundtrack, Purple, Super Unknown. Yeah. Singles, wait a minute. Is it a six changer or five? And
but then
realize you lived in that era. You know what we're talking about.
But then it's also the alternative stuff too. It's stuff like Soul Asylum. It's stuff like it might not be grunge, but like grunge adjacent.
Gin Blossoms and things like that.
Yes. Yes. And I in my earliest days, so some of these videos are kind of lost because I was putting out stuff on TikTok like crazy in 2021. And some of them would take off and go, but others, they wouldn't go. But you guys would appreciate this reference. I reference what you said about having the CDs in your room that you would hide when the girls coming over. I made a very specific reference that only you guys would get. Okay. I was doing a video about Alice in Chains' Man in the Box. Yep. And we're sitting there and one dude, me, says to me, I say, hey, he's using a talk box, kind of like Motley Crue in Dr. Feelgood. And the other guy goes, you still listen to Motley Crue? And the other guy's like, no. But the crazy thing is people in the comments were like, hey, I still like Motley Crue. Or what's wrong with liking Motley Crue? And I was like, if you're from my time, you know what I'm doing, which is you had to pretend that you were suddenly over all of these bands, so you'd stay cool amongst your friends. But meanwhile, in secret, you'd be like, "Man, I still want to listen to Dr. Feelgood."
So Jacob, we're gonna be 51 this year. How old are you right now?
I'm gonna be 46 this summer, so I'm 45. Wow.
So you're that much young. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm about five, six years younger than you guys. So I'm starting
real. You got the real like heavy part of that,
dude. I was 12 going on 13 when the grunge explosion happened. So this is literally, I'm just getting pubes and I'm even just close to being able to kiss That's a girl. Awesome. And the music scene is changing and it's just like a lot of hands in pockets. Like, hey, yeah. Hey, I'm depressed. Are you depressed? Should we make out? We should make out. Yeah.
But you're in a hoodie. You're listening to this shit, right? And it's not. Girls.
Totally.
At the Fort Lauderdale, whatever thingy names.
Right. It's Lane Staley telling you to sew his eyes shut.
Yeah.
Totally. Like, totally.
Now you're like,
it's everything before that. It's like, take your top off. Woo! Yeah. And then it's like, I'm being objectified right now. You know, yeah. And you're like, well, I guess I'm going to have to try a lot harder to pick up this girl.
Yep.
So it was a huge turning point. For me as a teenager and the time, because I was right then, you know, just getting into the middle school and dating and all that. And that was a huge turning point. So, yeah, I was all of high school was the 90s time for me.
He was in like middle school, things like that. I feel like we were in the golden age.
Yeah.
Because now we're by ourselves. We're drinking. Late night, we would hang out on the couch. We had a dorm. We had a dorm originally. Then we got into when we had our suite together, all our best friends. We would drink. We'd sit on the couch and you just fucking play these laid back tunes. And you like dive deep in what's going on. A Jar of Flies or totally. Siamese Dreams. And you're like listening to these lyrics. And you're like, listen to the drums in the beginning of Cherub Rock. And you're like, and you're going fucking nuts. But you're analyzing shit. Now you're older. You're mature. And we're also buying our own shit and we're discovering stuff. And then the internet hasn't really hit yet. So you're going to bootleg shops and trying to pick up stuff. And next thing you know, oh shit, I have a promotional Super Unknown album here. Like when that comes, like, oh shit, look at this. This just came out. They just got that. I'm going to take this.
And amazing.
It was so much fun. And I feel bad for the people now that are like on Spotify. Like, okay, I have a gazillion choices to make. But like going to the record store and buying those CDs and discovering those bands and albums now that we look back, we could have named just 20 in the first 5 minutes of talking are classic albums, all-time albums.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was – you guys had – like that, it's amazing what a few years difference makes because here I was 13, 14. One, I didn't have the means to buy a lot of my music. Yeah. And if I did, my parents were taking me, which means they're seeing the album cover, which means they're not allowing me to get it or, you know, it's stickered now. So, what's this lyric? So I had to deal with a lot of this protective layer from still being so young and my parents being afraid. You know, we were just coming out of the satanic panic of the 80s. Yep. And I had to convince them that, you know, these bands like, oh yeah, there may be some profanity, but please let me have it. And it was just this struggle. And it wouldn't be until I was really at the end of the 90s that I was able to go back and get the deeper meaning and understand more about what some of these artists were talking about. Cause even if I pretended like I knew what they were talking about, I did not know what they were talking about yet.
And I find a lot of the stuff now, and Zeus and I, we talk about it all the time. A lot of this stuff, if not all of it, has aged incredibly, incredibly well. Agreed. Incredibly well, to the point where I'm going to be 51 years old and I'm not doing it for nostalgic reasons. I'm doing it because it's enjoyable. I listen to Alice in Chains now more than I ever did for the past 30 years. The same thing with Pearl Jam. I mean, they have a new album coming out. So far, I love the two songs that I've heard.
They sound great.
And you know, like Screaming Tree, Sweet Oblivion, one of the greatest albums ever made. I absolutely love it.
Like, he loves
it. I go back and I listen to like Mad Season, Temple of the Dog, those grunge supergroups. That stuff still sounds great. And again, it's not a nostalgic thing. I go back, I listen to Motley Crue, I love it. But there's nostalgia to it. And I'm not trying to be a snob and tell you that, oh, you have to listen to Dirt. It's elevated music. It just, I think when it came out at the time, it was, oh, this is the 90s. This is grunge. This is flannel. This is Seattle. But after, when you strip all that away, that music just fucking absolutely kicked ass.
Agreed. And you could tell that there was authenticity to all of those guys. And those are the ones that stood the test of time. Yeah. Obviously, it got oversaturated and MTV was giving us buzz clips and we were getting, you know, these knockoff bands that weren't as important. But the ones that really did, you listen to it and you're like, so much care was put into this album. When you listen to Dirt, you go, they cared that this thing sounded amazing. It's analog. It's got that warmth to it. And it truly is it was a special time in music that I feel very lucky to not only have been a part of, but to now pass on to future generations. That's what's so fun for me and my platform is that sure, Gen Xers and some of the elder millennials that were part of it will write to me. But when I get like a 15-year-old kid who's like, hey, Smashing Pumpkins is now my favorite band because of you, that's the coolest moment for me. The coolest moment.
What prompted you to take your love of this and turn it into videos, but not just like informational type videos, but like comedy, you know, like the Rage thing? Like, where did you come up with the idea of you're going to play two different guys talking to each other? How did that evolve?
So I'll try not to make this too long of a story.
No, go ahead. It's okay.
I am an actor by trade. That's where it all began for me. I loved bands. I was in bands in high school, but I also got involved in plays and theater. And, you know, that's why I'm kind of this very extroverted, broad guy. I went to college for it. And then I moved to Los Angeles in my early 20s to try to make it into Hollywood, try to make it in the movie business. And I got married at a very young age. And it was very hard if you live in a city like this to navigate that creative pursuit without having a full-time job and finding a way to pay the bills. And so life just kept pulling me in all sorts of different ways. And, you know, I got the chance to make some fun content for YouTube with my buddies. And then that led to making a horror comedy movie that we made ourselves. And that's on Amazon. And,
oh, wow.
And you guys should check it out. It's called I Had a Bloody Good Time at House Harker. It's a fun splatter, very B movie.
I'm on it.
That's the horror fucking king
I'm the horror guy. Yeah.
You're going to love it. You'll post it in his horror group and everything. You'll be like, who the fuck is watching this now?
You're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's meant to be dumb. Go into knowing it's a ride.
Kind of like our show, but go ahead.
I mean, look, I wrote the screenplay and I'm in it. So, you know, it's going to have a silly,
perfect
comedic take.
Yeah.
But I did that. And I also did stand up comedy in Los Angeles for 9 years. I went out night after night and did open mics.
Wow.
And so I did all that shit. And it never really, you know, I was always working full time job. I have kids. And right around 2019, I started getting this idea. I was like, I don't think I want to chase creative careers anymore. I think I'm done. I'm happy with where I am in my job. And we're on the lockdown. Everybody's just cooped up in their houses. And my buddies keep saying to me, they're like, you should make a TikTok account. You should make a TikTok account. And I'm like, no. I was like, man, I'm in my 40s. And I did Vine back when that was a thing.
Oh, Vine. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was always, when I was doing stand-up, I was always making silly videos of myself just for fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I make a TikTok during the lockdown and I'm just bored and I'm making these dumb videos on there to an audience of 20 people. And I'm starting out with just like stupid stuff that comes into my head. You know, it's not going anywhere. It's nothing.
Yeah.
And then this one evening, it was like a Sunday evening. I am reminiscing about how when I watched Smells Like Teen Spirit on MTV, I'm reminiscing about that moment that my brain just kind of exploded. And I was like, what am I seeing right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting there and I was filming myself with the app and I didn't know the app well enough that when you have pre-selected the audio track in the app, it will not record your words.
So that's right.
So I put in the 30-second clip of Smells Like Teen Spirit and I'm sitting there and I'm talking to myself in the chair. And I'm like, what is this? And I go back and I'm like, da, 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 I do the whole thing. And then I play the video back and I'm like, there's no dialogue. So it was an accident. It was an accident.
No shit.
Yeah. And so I'm sitting there. I'm like, this is kind of funny, though, because I was like, it's like a silent film where Nirvana is the star and these two guys are talking about it and you're not you're not distracted by their words. You're just hearing it.
Yep.
And so I just type captions and I don't publish it right then and there. I actually just put my app away, you know, put it in my pocket. And the next morning I open up, I'm sitting there having my coffee before work and I open up TikTok and it says, do you want to publish this video? And I'm like, no, this is dumb. Like I've got, you know, nobody's going to care about this. And then at the last impulse second, I was like, well, nobody's on my channel. Publish.
Yep.
Go to work. Check my phone at lunch. We're in the hundreds of thousands at this point. And I call my wife and I go, I think I'm going viral.
Wow. And so
I get home and by the evening it's 300,000. By the next morning it's 1 million for the Smells Like Teen Spirit. So that's the very first one I did.
Holy shit.
So then the next morning I go, I wonder if lightning can strike twice. I wonder if I can do it again.
Yeah.
So I sit down and I'm like, okay, what's another song that I remember, like a very vivid memory right then in the moment? And it was Radiohead's Creep, and it was right?
Yep,
and I just remember being a kid and being like, did a lightning bolt just strike my speaker? Like, what the fuck is that noise?
Yeah.
So I sat there and I was like, okay, I'm going to record this video and I do the same thing with the captions and everything. And that one hits 1 million in 24 hours again.
Wow.
And so then I was like, I think that I'm onto something here.
Yeah.
The wildest part was I had done comedy, I had done acting, and I was a music nerd. So it was like everything I had done since I was like 15 years old was all coming to one road. And I was like, so I get to be funny and talk about music and make dumb videos and people will like it. And then here we are. Here we are today. And that's the story.
That's incredible.
Well, dude. I mean, kudos to you because you have the talent and the, you know, the skill to be able to pull that off, man.
Well, thank you.
That doesn't happen if me and him are like, hey, you want to do a video about Gene Simmons, his cod piece?
Hey, we're on year 6 of our podcast. Come on now.
No. I know. It's just, but that's fucking amazing. And what I like is it's our music. So that's why I gravitated towards your videos, because then you could go in. I know you're, and before I actually forget to ask this, I should have asked you right off the top.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
Am I incorrect? Or is Smashing Pumpkins your favorite band?
You are correct. 100% correct. That's my number one and has been since I heard Siamese Dream.
Is that your favorite album?
Yes.
Is Cherub Rock your favorite song?
Mayonnaise is my number one.
Yes. Yes.
Mayonnaise is my number one Fantastic. Smashing Pumpkins song of all time. Second place goes to Drown off the single soundtrack.
Oh, yes.
Love all that feedback at the end. And I would say Cherub is probably in that top five.
Did you ever see their video where they're doing it? I think it was like, it wasn't unplugged, but it's a live acoustic fucking thing.
Yeah.
The guitar on that is just, I get chills from it.
Dude, every single piece of footage of that band that exists from that time, I have seen or own in some form on a VHS tape.
So when he starts singing, "Let me out," you have to be from that era to know fucking vibe you get. It's totally. Not fucking Metallica thrash,
right.
But it's just got this angst that we were all feeling then. And it just fucking worked. And
I think that's a great point, Zeus. I don't mean to cut you off, but I think that's it. I think that when you listen to that music now, for people who have never heard it before, they're probably like, "Oh yeah, this is pretty good." But when you listen to it when it came out,
right,
it held so much more weight than, you know. Does that make sense? Like
100%, 100%. Because you, since then, a lot of other bands have come along and emulated or taken it and run with it. And so we've had a lot of artists over the past, 30 years that have used that and gone with it. So if I sit down and I show my son Smells Like Teen Spirit for the first time, he's like, "Cool," but he only knows it because it's always existed. It's always been around.
Correct.
But then he will hear, he doesn't understand that I was one age and then one night I hear it and then everything's different because nothing had come across my ears like that ever.
Nothing was like that. And it changed everything, right down from music, pop culture, clothing, fucking the geography of this country. People need to go to Seattle now. Like,
totally.
Everything fucking changed because of that one song. And thankfully, there was more talent than him up there. And then all of a sudden, everybody opened their eyes to these bands that didn't look like Poison and Warrant and things like that. And all of a sudden the music took over and it just like pushed everything aside and was like, "Let us in." And just like hair metal, eventually the copycats and the lessers came in and it watered it down. And then, but if you go, and I think there's a big six. I talk about it with Tom. We had actually an episode.
We did
on
an episode on it.
I got to hear that.
So you got the big four. In Seattle,
big four, of course.
Seattle,
big four.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I throw in Smashing Pumpkins and Stone Temple Pilots.
To
me, that's the big six of that era.
I think so, too.
And I think you can't touch them. All their first four or five albums, each one of them,
untouchable,
is incredible.
Yeah, it was like they just delivered gold every single time. And then after that, it was like, well, obviously, you'd run out of momentum. One, you'd get success and money and fame, so your gaze is off it a little bit. You know what I mean? I think that's the only reason why a lot of those artists that after their fourth, fifth album, it's not as good. It's because, well, when you're scrapping and fighting your way to the top and trying to figure things out, you're coming from such more like a visceral, raw place and you don't know what's going to happen next. But once you're comfortable and you're driving the nice cars, it's like probably not going to have as much angsty music anymore. So
another thing too, and forgive me if I sound like, kind of like the old man here. I'm a fan of physical media and streaming. I do both.
Yeah.
But when these albums came out in the 90s, like Zeus said, we would sit around in the dorm rooms or the suites or whatever. You'd put the CD on. You didn't skip songs.
No.
You listened to every track. So when you're listening to Stone Temple Pilots, like Core.
Core,
like when Naked Sunday comes on, like that was never going to be a single. You're like, holy shit, fuck it. So now you hear it like now. And again, I don't want to sound like that old guy with the yelling at the cloud. It's like you hear the singles, you hear the hits. That's it. You really have to be like, OK, am I going to stream this entire album? Back then you put the CD on, you'd never skipped a track.
It wasn't a thing, right? You wouldn't go to the trouble to pull it out of the case, put it in to just play one song.
Yep.
You'd made the decision, I'm going to listen to this album start to finish.
Start to finish.
And so it was like reading a book. It had its journey. You knew where the album began, where it ended, and even the weird transitional things or the hidden tracks were a part of the journey.
Yeah.
And so it's just it is a phenomenon that now as an adult, I love going back and doing because I stream also. I have my Spotify playlist. But one of my favorite things to do is when I do an episode of my podcast, Waterproof Records, I will pick the album that I'm going to focus on. And leading up to that episode, I will listen to that thing start to finish a couple days in a row.
Yep.
And I'm suddenly just transported back in time. And I'm remembering listening to these, you know, these songs that I haven't listened to in 20 years because they're not the main track off the album. And it's been really refreshing.
And there's something to be said for if you listen, you go listen to, like, you know, I keep talking about Alice in Chains, but you listen to Jar of Flies in order, start to finish, not on shuffle, not as part of a mix or a playlist. You listen to it in order. It really does offer a different kind of energy than just playing No Excuses or playing
Absolutely.
Don't Follow. When you listen to the same thing with Dirt, I mean, that album, you talk about going on a or never mind. It's a different experience. And I know everybody can say that about whatever genre of music, or, you know, you go listen to Led Zeppelin 4 start to finish, whatever. I get it. But the music was so different and what they were saying was so different that listening to these albums start to finish just carried so much weight.
Yeah. And I think that we might be about to hit a renaissance of this returning in some way. I'm seeing some of the younger kids and the bands that are coming out now. They're so inspired by the 90s that they're really trying to bring it back there. And so I'm hopeful that for my son's generation, that there's going to be a lot of, and not all in alternative, it could be in hip hop, it could be whatever genre, but they're all looking back to these days of where things weren't so instantaneous, and they're trying to recapture that energy. And I think that we could be in for a treat over the next, you know, decade of you know, young people writing some good shit. So
For me, I love the fact that Tom could do, let's say he made a mixtape and he burned a CD of the same five CDs that we're going to be talking about.
Using LimeWire.
Yeah. Right?
LimeWire.
But I could take those same five CDs and burn 20 songs, and he could do 20 songs, and we may not even have the same songs on it.
Right.
Because you didn't have to have the hits. There's always a deep cut on those albums that spoke to me. May didn't speak to you, but we would find different songs that really, like, to me, I mean, obviously, No Excuses sticks out, but Jar of Flies, I gravitate to Don't Follow.
Don't Follow.
I Stay Away.
Yeah.
There's certain things about certain songs, where you were in college when we heard it, what was you thinking, especially when you're boozing it up with your buddies, and then you're like, have you ever lost anything that was important to you? Let's put on some Alice in Chains. And you're like, Lane is speaking to me now. And
You feel like doing heroin right now with me.
You want to know what was playing when I was in college, guys? It was the boy band.
Oh, that's right. Revolution. It was the late 90s.
Oh my God. So I was in my dorm. Here I am. I'm so excited to be in college. And you turn on MTV and it was TRL and it was And I was like, this is a nightmare. And then the only alternative to that was the new metal uprising with Korn and Limp Bizkit and all that. And so I was, at the time, I was like, these are not viable options that I would enjoy. And years later, I would maybe find some of the joy that I could find in, like, Korn and some of those bands. I would be like, oh, okay, I can hear some cool sounds in this. But at the time, it was like they gave me these two paths, and I was like, I don't want either of these.
Yeah, it was a rough time.
It's a rough time.
It's a rough time.
But we had that, and we also had our own, like, you know, we had our love for Kiss. We had the 70s music. We would pro on some Zeppelin. And like, there was exciting stuff in hip hop going on, Dr. Dre and stuff. So there was great music, and it just, I feel bad for the people that don't get it. And so when they look, and so we have all our friends and most of our listeners, they're in that hair metal stuff. Oh, fucking, oh, I don't want to kill myself. You guys are fucking want to listen to depressing music. And I'm like, dude, if you want to kill yourself because you heard a song, you don't fucking, it ain't the music. You need help.
Right.
It's not the fucking song that's taking you to go off the fucking cliff. So that's the other aspect of the stupid stereotype that they can't enjoy it. These guys are all about depression and heroin versus this guy's all about partying and having fun. Which one would I choose? I want partying, having fun. No, that's
well. First of all, guess what? You're 50. You're not partying.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Okay,
right?
You're
gonna feel that tomorrow, big time. Yeah. You know,
but that's the thing, that ugly stereotype about our music. You don't. I mean, and what's great is like you'll always hear the misconception, like Grohl and those guys will say about Kurt. They're like, he wasn't a miserable person. He told jokes. He was laughing. He had his own internal demons that he had privately, but he wasn't a miserable person to be around. He was actually a funny guy. Same thing with Layne Staley. People fucking loved him. He wasn't hey, you guys go over there. I'm going to be on the couch shooting heroin.
Right. They had their demons, but they were regular dudes in rock bands. You go back to Facelift and you're like, that's practically a metal album, you know, before they get to Dirt. They're just a metal band, and Soundgarden is just a metal band. It only becomes grunge because these guys were fucking broke. And all they could afford were boots from Salvation Army and hand-me-down flannels. And everybody's like, oh, they must be grunge because they can't, you know, they were trying to compete with hair metal, but they couldn't do it.
You want to laugh. Go back and look at early, like I'm talking 1990-91 photos of Alice in Chains and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden. These guys look like the biggest friggin' dorks in the world.
Yeah,
these guys are not what you would call cool, handsome rock stars. They look they look like nerds.
However, I just posted it because somebody put it up. Then there's that clip of AIC doing It Ain't Like That from Singles.
Where he's whipping his head back.
I just posted that. I just retweeted from our account. I'm like, this is the fucking, you guys have to be like, this is the coolest thing. That guitar sound that Cantrell is coming out. Layne just banging his head.
And it's I will tell you, and I love the fact that they just finally, within the past year, released, I don't know if you saw this, Jacob, I'm sure you did, they released a volume 2 of the single soundtrack.
Yes, yes.
With a lot of the stuff, and that's on it, a lot of outtakes, a lot of stuff that didn't make it onto the original soundtrack that we got.
Yeah, a lot of Cornell-like stuff.
Yeah, a lot of Chris Cornell
shit. Fantastic. You're like, why wasn't this in the fucking movie?
And Matt Dillon with his band Citizen Dick. Touch Me, I'm Dick.
I love it. I love it.
It's so great. It's so funny.
Those moments are just, those are things, like those iconic moments. How about when, you know, Kurt's now gone.
Yeah.
And now Smashing Pumpkins comes out with Bullet, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Melancholy, a double album. They tried to talk them out of it. This is 1995, and they tell them, like, you're never going to do, like, a double album is a dumb idea. But you know what? Like, it's a masterpiece. It's like
they took over the mantle over when Kurt died.
Absolutely.
And that song came out. That was almost like a second breath of fresh air of Smells Like Teen Spirit. How big that song and video was.
Totally.
And how big Smashing Pumpkins were on that third album of theirs. Like, we all remember these moments, right?
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden now, Pearl Jam, when they went on SNL right after Kurt died, and he's got the K on his shirt. Where were we? We all remember all these fucking legendary part of these bands of ours or AIC when they fucking did Unplugged.
Unplugged.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I wanted to say, because you said the thing about the people's misconceptions about all 90s being depressing. Yeah. I'm in this 90s cover band here in L.A., and you're going to get a kick out of the name of our band if you don't already know it. The name of our cover band is Temple of the Dads.
Nice. Love it.
I had to do a touch of humor in there because me and the drummer, we met in stand-up comedy, but we do 90 songs. But when we put out there to try to play around L.A., you would not believe how many places are like, oh, you guys do 90s? No, thanks. They'll take 70s, 80s all day. But when they hear it's 90s, they're kind of like, no. But here's the crazy thing. When we do get to play, we play the songs that get people up on their feet, howling out loud, like loving every minute of it because they're forgetting.
Give us some songs.
Yeah, we do Even Flow and Alive by Pearl Jam off the album.
Yeah.
We do Say It Ain't So, you know, by Weezer. We do Green Day's, you know, Longview. We do Wicked Garden by STP.
Yep.
We do fucking Sober by Tool. We do. We do Hunger Strike by Temple of the Dog. We bring those ones that you used to sit around in your dorm. and sing and belt at the top of your lungs. And so we when we curate our playlist, we make sure that they're the fun ones. We don't sit there and do the ones that, you know, you're going to be sitting in the corner and crying.
You're not going to play Angry Chair in front of a crowd of
right, exactly. Blah, blah. It's like
I wish you did, though.
Yeah, I mean, we do for Alice in Chains, we do Man in the Box and we do Wood because those always get people like, yes, oh, I love this song so much, you know. Yeah. But those are some of the songs we do.
Yeah, another huge aspect of the 90s, and I know Jacob, that you were obviously a little bit younger, but we talk about this all the time, not just the festival scene, specifically Lollapalooza, and how you had a chance to see these bands, and every year the lineup got better and better. I went to 3 or 4 of them, but then also, it was the era of the soundtrack. You know, we talked about singles,
man.
Then you had, like, The Crow. You had all these alternative
reality bites,
and then even like something like Empire Records that comes over.
Yes, Empire Records.
Yeah. You know, like
Judgment Night.
Judgment Night. Yes. Holy shit! Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you had these soundtracks that were unbelievable, and they came out of nowhere, and you would get all these bands, and they would introduce you to bands that you'd never heard before,
exactly.
Plus your favorite bands. Yeah. So it was just this thing. It was this unbelievable thing that went away, and it's a tragedy because you go, man, that's how I discovered, you know, you get the Crow album, and you're hearing these bands. You're like, otherwise I haven't heard, you know, wouldn't have heard this band.
And you're hearing songs that are new. So like, when I got The Crow, I'm like, I never heard Darkness by Rage Against the Machine before that.
Totally.
Or even a song like I Love Pantera, like they had a song called The Badge on there. Like that wasn't on it. Like, you're like, holy shit, did you get this soundtrack? These are new songs. But like when singles came out, we're like, holy shit, Pearl Jam has two songs that we've never heard before.
Totally. It was such a big deal. State of Love and Trust and Breath. To this day, State of Love and Trust is probably one of my favorite Pearl Jam songs of all time.
Me too. Right up there. No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Yep.
Love it.
I mean, we could do this conversation about those songs. And the thing that I always get is just the people that know and live through it and still actually promote this music. It's not forgotten. And I wish that some of our listeners, because they don't like it,
they hate it.
It's a funny fucking.
We do have a few people that kind of hide in the shadows.
Yeah. Sure. What's funny is somebody posted and I'm like, it's going to get stomped. Somebody posted something about Poison versus Nirvana. And all the morons came out and Poison was stomping on Nirvana, all the people. And I'm like, we need to get out of this bubble because in what fucking planet?
There is no planet.
Like Poison's better or more important or anything than Nirvana. Are we fucking joking? You wrote number one Bad Boy.
You wrote Unskinny Bop for fuck's sake.
Skinny Bop, right?
Yeah,
right?
But meanwhile, theirs is the greatest unplugged probably album of all time.
Which is a great segue, Zeus, because I was just going to say, Jacob, another thing that I love about the 90s was, and I loved it for two reasons. MTV Unplugged, first, because you were seeing bands the way you never saw, them before. But to me, it also showed you how great these songs actually are and how great these vocalists were.
Yeah,
you know,
100%. That is such a good point, because one, it did two things. Because if you think about the production value of the hair metal, the rock of the 80s, there was a lot of the overdubs and the layering and making these things sound just studio rich and sound unbelievably full.
Yep.
And here on this Unplug, you could see that all you needed was a stripped down guitar, little bit of percussion, little bit of bass, and the voice, and the song stands on its own. Yeah. So it showed you the musicianship. You don't have to be one of these unbelievable, you know, shred in the neck. You have to have an understanding of what makes a powerful, moving song. Mm-hmm. And that changed things for kids watching that, because it did for me too. I had gotten a guitar wanting to play like Kirk Hammett in Metallica, and I got overwhelmed day one. Was like, how am I ever gonna match this dude? But the moment you saw people up there playing guitar in a much more simple way, and some would take that as like a criticism. No, it was stripping down what's needed to write a song. You know what I mean?
Right,
and it was the same thing that happened with like the Ramones and how it changed that whole scene. It made young people go, I could start a band. Yep. I could start a band. I could get with my buddies and we could jam, you know. Yep. That was a cool thing to
Another thing, and Zeus knows that I love this, and I'm anxious to see where you come from at this angle. The 90s for me was a huge, there was a huge wealth of awesome alternative female fronted bands.
Oh, you know, man.
Belly, Letters to Cleo, Juliana Hatfield. To this, I still listen to that shit, and I love that. And
absolutely.
I thought it was so cool because the bands that they were in kicked ass. It was like power pop, almost punk, but it added something to, you know, it wasn't grunge, but it was something that was unique for the time. And I feel like that's kind of lost now because any female fronted band that you're hearing now, like we were talking about Lizzie Hale and Hailstorm, great band, nothing to take away from them at all, but they're just another hard rock band with a female singer, which she's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. The women of the 90s was an incredible time.
It was awesome.
All of them were so, like, they'd speak their mind. Their lyrics were bold, unafraid. They all had such an individual kind of personality to them. And they didn't seem like they gave a shit about competing against each other. They were like, we're just happy to be, you know, at the table and playing these songs with everybody else, starting things like Lilith Fair and getting out there and getting into the mainstream. And it was an unbelievable time of women in rock. To this day, you can look back and I have a playlist that I've made, and it's just like, you're just like PJ Harvey, Alanis Morissette. You know,
I have a playlist that's all the 90s girls.
You guys haven't mentioned the best one of them all.
You're probably going to say it. I'm like, which one?
Go ahead.
My favorite is Jewel.
I knew it. Jewel. I was going to say Jewel. Yep.
Jewel was incredible. I had that album
of hers is a fucking one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah.
Fucking beautiful.
And amazing songwriter.
Drop dead gorgeous too. Doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love that. But I want to jump back to one other thing.
Go ahead.
We're talking about Unplugged. So we mentioned the Big Six. So I'm going to throw some songs and I can kind of prove the point in what I'm saying. You're not going to get fucking Motley Crue doing the Wild Side on Unplugged and going, wow, what a great stripped down version of this. Or, you know, but here's some songs.
You want those pissed off comments, don't
you?
You're asking for them now.
Bring it.
Cherry Pie on Unplugged is just
although Rat did do an MTV Unplugged one time.
Yeah, because
I don't think I ever
different.
Saw that.
Yeah,
Rat is a little bit different, but I'll throw this out to you. Cornell doing Seasons.
Oh, incredible.
Alice in Chains doing what we laughed about, Angry Chair. Think about the fucking distortion on some of these songs that went to acoustic part, and it still worked without the distortion. PJ doing Porch, version. That is the fucking greatest. So the other one I mentioned earlier, Cheb Rock by Smashing Pumpkins. You know what that distortion comes in after the first original fucking guitar going? That's all distortion. Go listen to it Unplugged, and you're still like, wow.
You're still blown away. You're still blown away.
Nirvana doing All Apologies is probably my favorite acoustic version. That Unplugged All Apologies, just beautiful song. And his voice and that ache in this voice. He's not Layne Staley. But he had that ache. And you feel it. And those are my favorite type of singers. And then you got STP. You look at him doing Creep.
Incredible.
Yeah, they're short little Unplugged album. Their singers could do it. The musicians can do it. I mean, think of the guitar players, the DeLeo brothers and STP, Jerry Cantrell.
Mike McCready.
Oh,
Mike McCready,
And Stone.
Brilliant.
Right?
Yeah. Brilliant musicians. Corbain,
he's not a fucking thing, but he can make fun fucking riffs. And go listen to Breed and other shit that he would do. And, you know, not to throw them under, to make them be forgotten, but even Tom's other kind of, I don't know, what do we call them? Oh, not favorite band, but dark horse band from that era. He loves Screaming Trees. Mark Lonergan.
Love them. Love
them. How about that fucking
R.I.P. to that brilliant, brilliant musician and songer. I mean, just incredible.
One of the greatest voices of that era. Yeah,
and what bugs 100%. Me is him and Kurt were going to do that fucking project together, and they never finished it.
Yep. I know, man.
Do you ever hear do you have the box set of Deep Cuts When the Lights Go Out and the Nirvana one, and they have when they hung him on the cross? Have you ever heard
I remember you played that you played that for me, Zeus.
Not the most chilling thing you've ever heard. That's him and Lonergan doing that, and it's gonna be incredible on Lonergan's fucking album. I every time I hear that, I'm like, this is, it's almost like Lead Belly back from the fucking 1920s Ghost is singing it just like him. It is just, and that's the shit when people annoy me with Nirvana. It's like, oh, fucking smells like Teen Spirit, In Bloom, and Come As You Are. I'm like, In Bloom and Come As You Are, they're probably one of my least favorite songs by them. Go into the deep cut shit that they did, stuff on their box sets and their CD singles, even in his youth, things like that, Curmudgeon. Fucking brilliant shit, but he's such a fucking weirdo that he's like, ah, this is too good. Throw that on side B of this CD single. I don't want it on this album. Like, it's just amazing the amount of great songs that they put out in such a short period of time. So everyone thinks that Nirvana was just strictly one album. It just, people that just don't know. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, and it is a shame. I feel bad for them at the end of the day, because it's like you're missing out. You're missing out, because if you fight it so hard that you can't even, you know, look past the hit songs and go a little bit deeper. We only got to have their music for so long because, you know, here's a perfect example. Bands like Motley Crue are constantly in tumultuous litigation over money and the art and who, what belongs to who, and the backing tracks on stage and all this stuff and all of that. Kurt couldn't even handle that environment more than a couple years without piecing out. True. And that is the kind of person that you kind of need to listen to. You need to listen to somebody like that, because somebody like that is so over that bullshit that they're like, I can't do this. And of course he had his own shit going on, but that is somebody that you go, if you're not willing to stop and listen to somebody who wouldn't put up with the garbage that comes from fake industry, then I feel bad that you're going to miss that voice, because that voice was gone too soon. You know?
And what am I? And it just, this is how brilliant and how much of a wise ass Kurt Cobain is. You listen to the very first words of In Utero.
Yeah.
Teenage angst has paid off well.
Has paid off well. Exactly.
Like, I love that.
Now I'm old and bored.
I'm old and bored.
He knew exactly what was happening.
Yes. It's fucking brilliant. I love it.
And it's
Jacob, what do you think of, so I wave the flag constantly for the new era of Alice in Chains with William Duvall. Those three albums to me are great. Those three albums are unskippable. I'm not saying that they're better than the Layne Staley. I'm saying, because it's Jerry Cantrell who's the engine behind Alice in Chains.
That's what I would say. Yeah. That's what I would say I would say you're right. And that's why I wave the flag, because Jerry is every much, if not more, of what made Alice in Chains Alice in Chains. Layne had an incredible voice, brought a lot to the table. But it was Jerry's songwriting that was making those things happen.
I gravitate towards Jerry's songs. When I realized as I grew up and stuff, I started being like, wait a minute, that's Cantrell wrote that. Cantrell wrote that one.
Yeah,
that's him. And so when you pick up on that, you go, well, the talent, he didn't die. He went on. He continued on, and he found a voice, an excellent voice to carry on the torch. And so for those people that just, you know, I'm like, hey, More, I get closer to the stage then if you're going to skip out on this great show. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it is, I went to see Jerry Cantrell in 2022, and it was
us too. Oh,
it was amazing. I had the best time.
On the new album, which we fucking love.
Brighton is that's a perfect record, that Brighton
album. It was so good. And and when he would play them Bones and things like that, I was losing my mind, because it still sounded like it was there. You know, I'm with you on that.
Do you find, like, right now, like we still listen to this stuff as part of our regular daily list? Are you still in your free time, not when you're doing videos or your podcast, is this kind of the music that you're still kind of surrounding yourself with?
Yes. But I would say ever since the videos took me to a further place, I almost feel a sense of, I need to be caught up on what else is coming out now, and so that I can speak to new bands, you know, address that. But I would say that if you're in my playlist and in my car, the majority of the time I'm going back to the stuff that I grew up with as a teenager. I'm also a really big heavy metal fan, so I listen to I don't cover that a lot on my channel, but I listen to a lot of really, really heavy metal.
Yeah.
And so those are the things I oscillate between. It's just the classic albums.
Throw me some bands then. I'm curious.
So I listened to, like, one of my favorites of all time was the Black Dahlia Murder, which, you know, Trevor passed away a couple years ago. But I love Carnifex. I love drawing a blank on my head right now because I'm like on this. I mean, I grew up on Pantera and Testament and Metallica and Slayer and Megadeth.
Nice.
And then I started getting into like Amon Amarth like 15 years ago and started digging the whole Viking metal thing. And then, you know, and then, and then I started getting into, what was some of these other bands that I've been, Rivers of Nihil. So those are some off the top of my head that I've been listening to. Yeah.
Nice. Well, yeah. Oh, sorry, Zeus. I thought you were going to go.
No. So for me, this kind of conversation could happen all day long. You could tell from the joy that we're getting. We don't get this release often.
Yeah.
So the fact that we get to do this is great. Do you ever get into Kiss?
So I only know the hits.
Yep.
Because, you know, I know the I Was Made for Loving You. I know Detroit Rock City. I Want to Rock and Roll All Night. I know those songs.
Yeah.
Okay. And the only reason I miss the Kiss wagon, you're going to remember what I said earlier about the album covers and my prospective parents. I am originally, guys, I'm originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma. That is my hometown, my home state.
Oh, boy. So
I grew up in the Bible Belt, which I describe more like Bible overalls because it was much larger piece of clothing to envelop my whole life with my parents.
Yep.
And so anything that seemed like it was demonic or devilish was like banned from the house.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was to come in rocking some Kiss, I think my parents would have taken me to counseling. So I was not, you know, like even Slayer, when I would hear Slayer, I used to feel really guilty for enjoying it. I used to like go to church and be like, God, forgive me for enjoying Rain and Blood. I love it so much. You know,
forgive me for buying Haunting the Chapel and cassette. Yeah,
like, forgive me for my sins. So I, besides the hit stuff, I kind of missed out on the theatricality and the big, broad funness of Kiss. But my dude, Mr. Billy Corgan from Smashing Pumpkins, is a Kiss guy.
Oh, he massive Kiss fan.
Massive Kiss fan. And so my hero loved them. So they're obviously great.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Jacob, tell everybody where they can find you. If for some reason there are people out there that don't know where to find you, be entertained by you, your videos, your podcast, where can everybody find you?
You got it. Well, it all started for me on TikTok, and there it's just at the Jacob Givens. The only reason the was added to my name was because some other guy got to Jacob Givens before me. But on Instagram, it's just at Jacob Givens, and, you know, YouTube, it's just Jacob Givens, and, you know, the Facebooks, I'm pretty much all those places. TikTok has been muting my videos. They're doing some weird licensing things. So if you go to my page and you're like, oh, I can't hear any of this stuff, over on Instagram, the reels, you can hear pretty much everything. And then also I'm bringing more and more to YouTube, but those are the places you can find me.
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up because I went back today to, I wanted to watch that Rage Against the Machine video.
It's muted,
and it said audio muted, and I was like, wait, what?
TikTok faced this terrible licensing issue with Universal Music Group, and they muted a lot of those videos. And then beyond that, because they're in hot water all over the place, they're losing a lot of their rights for music. Yep. So they muted about 50% of my videos on TikTok. Luckily, I haven't lost my audience because I've made videos about like, well, hey, I'm going to just do my best to keep going, talking about bands and doing what I can. But everything that's on Instagram is still up. Everything that's on YouTube is still up. So I knew this day might come that the licensing monsters would come and take it away from me. But then you guys should definitely check out I Had a Bloody Good Time at House Harker on Amazon.
Oh, I'm on it. Believe me,
you got to watch it.
I will do that. I will do that.
Yeah.
Jacob, one more thing before we let you go. Zeus and I, we have another sidecast. We do, it's called the Album Review Crew. We do once a month. We pick an album and we pick it apart. We spend 2+ hours talking about everything from the cover to the songs to the tracks. Every once in a while we get in there. We've done a few Alice in Chains albums. We've done a Soundgarden album. In the future, if we do one of these albums, we would be honored if you could get it where you could join us and be the third
man love that.
On an album like that.
I would love that. Have you guys done Siamese Dream yet?
No, we have not.
We already have you earmarked for it.
We have not done it yet. So
I could have a college degree in that album. So you should definitely have me back.
Perfect. Perfect.
Definitely will.
He is Jacob Givens. This has been a blast, dude. Thank you so much. We love talking this stuff, and we're so happy to finally have you on. Thank you, Jacob.
Yeah. Man, my pleasure. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. I had a blast.
Thank you. Tom, that was Jacob Givens. What do you think?
great stuff. I love when we can nerd out on stuff like that, because let's be honest, we don't have a lot of guests, if any, where we can, you know, nerd out over grunge and 90s alternative. And that's exactly why we wanted him on.
Well, if you guys could see the video
of
how excited all three of us were in the beginning. Whoa. Like, where do we talk about next? I found a grunge guy. I found you, a 90s guy. It was just off the charts. This was a personal love fest for us. We love having Jacob on. We'll definitely have him back. He'd be great for an ARC episode.
Oh, no doubt.
Something from that album. Maybe when we get to Siamese Dream, that's his favorite album.
Yep.
We hope you guys liked it. We loved it. And till next time, peace out, Girl Scout.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.